Monday Mindset Podcast, where we share things of interest to us and hopefully to you.
So let's get started with episode number 76. And this week, it's Terry's turn to share something that she's found interesting this week. What have you got for us today, Terry?
Well, Daisy, similar to what you have done before, I have resorted to finding a short podcast to talk about.
Because, stressful week.
Yes, very stressful week. And I know sometimes we love to share certain podcasts, but they're 2-hour episodes. And then to try to condense that down and to try to get all of that information is a little bit overwhelming.
And you have to like listen to it at least twice.
Right, at least.
To take notes. Yeah. Before you know it, you spend the whole day.
So I went back to Quick Brain with Jim Quick. He's one of our favorites that we've talked about in here before. And this episode is called Mind Over Body with Sean Stevenson.
Ah, Sean Stevenson again.
I really enjoy Sean Stevenson's podcast. I think I've done a few of his episodes and I've started to read his book, Eat Smarter. But this little short podcast that they did, I think has an example of a tip that I think people could really start applying right away. It's kind of easy, but it will take some practice. So
exciting.
The topic is about the importance of our mindset and what we're telling ourselves. And, you know, this is a common theme. You and I talk about it often. It's been something I've been talking about in my work for years. But I think sometimes seeing a very tangible example of it at work is really powerful. So a lot of what Sean Stevenson works on is optimizing health and weight loss. And of course, in the mix of all of that is the idea of hunger and eating healthy and how to manage hunger and how to maybe not have cravings and things. So he was talking in this episode about a study that was done at Stanford. And I also heard Andrew Huberman refer to this study in one of the podcasts of his that I listened to, one of the Huberman Lab podcast episodes that I listened to. But in this study, people were given a shake, a milkshake, and it was 380 calories, I think he said. But they were either told that it was a lower calorie, they had some name for it, like, you know, sensible shake or something like that. And they were told that it was healthier and lower calorie. And then the other people were given a shake that was basically described as being a decadent type of shake. But it also was the same. They were drinking the same shake. So what they found in this study is they tested their ghrelin levels. Ghrelin is the hormone that triggers us to know that we need more food or that we're satisfied. It's our hunger hormone.
Yeah, it's kind of known, isn't it? It's the hunger
hormone. I refer to it as a gremlin, not ghrelin.
That's a good one. I haven't heard that before.
And so what happened in this study, the people who ate what they believed was the decadent shake, high calorie, bad for you kind of shake, their ghrelin level went down, I think he said as much as like 3 times their beginning level. The people who ate the sensible shake, their ghrelin level did not decrease. Mm-hmm. So they were still hungry or still had the urge for more, but they ate the exact same thing.
How funny.
So people who were thinking, I just ate this delicious thing that is decadent, probably horrible for me, they were satisfied. The people who ate what they thought was lower calorie, healthier, probably thought lower fat or whatever, they were still hungry. And I know in the very beginning of doing these podcasts together, I shared an episode about the placebo effect and that what we think about a treatment or something affects the outcome. And this to me is such a powerful example of what we think of the food we're eating really can affect not just our perceived sense of satiety or satisfaction, but actually change our level of a hormone in our body.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
And so if you think about this in a world today where a lot of people are working on eating well, optimizing health, possibly losing weight, what messages are we telling ourselves? If we eat the thing that we think is better for us, but we don't like it, do we keep hunger going? Do we keep cravings going more? When we feel like we're indulging in something, how does that affect us? And for me, the takeaway really is not necessarily that I should be indulging in food that is more problematic, but maybe when I eat healthy food, I should talk it up a little bit to myself. Remind myself what a great meal I just had, how tasty it was, and how filling and satisfying it was. Because that's what happened in these two. It's what they told themselves about that shake that affected their resulting hunger level. So we can do this just by changing how we're thinking about the food we're eating.
There's one potential stumbling block that is coming to me about this. And I wonder if it's a case of it maybe just being a partial stumbling block that you can sort of get over. And it's the difference between knowing or absolutely believing something to be the case and telling or convincing yourself something is the case, but when you know that it isn't necessarily. Do you see what I mean?
I do.
The difference I see with these two groups were that they were told something that they took as fact, and so they consumed that shake 100% believing that it was either this really rich, satisfying indulgence, or it was the sort of skinny, slim fast type shake, and that they weren't going to be satisfied by it. It was the difference between that, and I'm imagining an experiment where you have two groups where you have, I don't know, some sort of mindfulness, mindset training exercise where you get the people to tell themselves it's a rich, indulgent shake versus it's a sensible, slimline shake on the other half. Do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I wonder, can we get sort of part way there? Is it possible if we keep repeating it with this whole, you know, tapping into the neuroplasticity idea that we can get to that, you know, really 100% believing it or the impact of that on something like ghrelin? That's, you know, that's the question I have.
I think an important factor there is, I think I've talked about this before here. Marissa Peer talks about, and other people talk about it, our brain doesn't know the difference between fact and make-believe, really.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the challenge, and I'm not sure if I'm hitting on the same thing that you're talking about, but let's say, for example, I eat two celery stalks and a half a can of tuna. I don't think there's any way I'm going to convince my brain that that was a fully satisfying, luxurious meal. But I think if I eat, let's say, a nice piece of fish and some vegetables and fat, which is a healthy meal. And if I then say to myself, what a great meal I just had. I nourished my body and I had the right amount of food and it was really delicious and it's going to serve me well. I think that is effective. Mm. I don't think lying to ourselves and trying to convince ourselves that, you know, eating something that tastes like cardboard is delicious and will do the trick. You know, there are so many other examples. I don't remember if I've shared this one here, but there's an example of a study done with hotel workers. They tell some of them ahead of time, they do a little bit of some mindfulness or some information giving about the work that they do. And they tell some of them that the movement they do during their job is as powerful as doing an extensive workout, that it has great effects for their health and weight loss. But that's the only intervention. They just told them that. They didn't ask them to change what they were eating or work harder or anything. And when they studied the two groups, one who received this information and one that did not, they actually had lost weight. Their biomarkers had improved. because they believed that what they were doing had a positive effect. Now, my guess is in this example, it also affected, they probably moved a little more because they knew it was beneficial. They probably sat down while they were working less often than those who had not been given that piece of information. So again, biomarkers changing without input in the study other than mindset change.
I think the other thing that's striking me there is tapping back into this idea that we've spoken about before about celebrating the little steps, being mindful of those opportunities to celebrate. I can imagine now listening to you talking how it can start feeding itself. And I think we have the advantage. I know the idea behind this podcast was to be diet agnostic, but you know, most people know the way we eat. We like to eat low carb, keto. And what I felt is always a huge advantage with this way of eating is that it's really delicious and it does feel indulgent. Even if you're, you know, you're going through a phase where you're tightening up and you're being a bit strict, it still feels fairly indulgent. It doesn't feel like a super restrictive diet that you're used to from the bad old days when, I don't know, when you just ate awful things for 2 weeks and you felt hungry all the time and all the rest of it. I think the trick could really be being really mindful. Like you say, it's not about lying to yourself. It's just really being aware of all the good stuff as you go and really focusing on that and having those little sort of celebratory moments, thinking of those moments as indulgent and keep reinforcing that in your brain. And like you were saying about Marissa Peer's ideas that your brain doesn't know the difference between the two. So you are drip feeding little bits of truth that you keep reinforcing.
Absolutely.
I can see how you can make it work. And what's really funny, when you started talking about it and mentioned ghrelin, it makes me think of the weight loss surgery I had. And one of the big things apparently with the gastric sleeve is that by cutting away part of your stomach, it cuts away a big part of where you're producing ghrelin and it's supposed to make you less hungry and that's why, and you know, blah, 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 the theories. But it's so interesting to hear you talk about how what you think can impact your ghrelin. And I've read various things about, not that it's not true that they're taking away some of the ghrelin production there, but you start making it in other places, you sort of grow back the ability, if you like, to make it. And I certainly found the way they had me eating to start with, I was hungry all the time. So you know, it just goes to show, coming at it from the other direction, where you're doing something physically that's supposed to be lowering your ghrelin, doesn't necessarily work. But you come from the mind direction and you can alter it just by thinking something different. You know, that's fascinating.
Absolutely. And although this was a very short episode, Sean Stevenson did talk a little bit in the beginning about the idea that many of us don't think of this or give this concept enough credence, but every thought we have causes a chemical response in our body. You can feel it. So for example, if I say, I'm so angry, I'm tightening my fist when I say that to you. Thinking that thought triggers a physiological response. Every thought we have has a chemical response in our body, sometimes positive and sometimes not. But it just keeps emphasizing to me how important what we think, which thoughts we give attention to, which thoughts we steer away from, that is having an effect on us physiologically.
Yes, it reminds me, we've had this conversation before with mood, how you can change your mood by something you're watching. You know, if you watch something that's sad and makes you cry, it can drop your mood. Or if you're feeling down and you watch something that makes you laugh, or even just the act of making yourself laugh, can go some way at least to cheering you up. So yes, it makes absolute sense.
So maybe this is a reason why it's a good thing that I stopped listening to my favorite murder.
It was giving you the urge.
No, not that. But it does keep your brain in a little bit of a darker place. So, you know, what we feed our thoughts, what thoughts we feed our brain, what thoughts we feed our body. I get excited every time I see an example of this in a podcast or in an article I'm reading, because I think so many of us haven't really embraced this yet, that what we are doing with our thoughts can make all the difference in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think just being really mindful about the food that you're eating, and the chances are, if you're eating the kind of food we eat, it's going to be quite easy to be mindful about how delicious it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's something I've been reminding myself. I think I mentioned a couple of episodes back about not focusing on sweet things, that if I was too focused on sweet things, I would often be eating my way through the savory part of the meal without really appreciating it. And it's only when I cut out the sweet stuff, so there wasn't that sweet thing at the end, that I'd become more appreciative of the meal I was having and how delicious that was in and of itself. Mm-hmm. So yes, it reminds me just to slow down a bit and be mindful about what I'm eating, and yes, celebrating it.
Absolutely. And again, this specific piece was about food and ghrelin, but I think you could find as many other examples of motivation and satisfaction and other things. So I just think it's great to keep working on what thoughts we give attention to, which thoughts we let pass by, and really affecting ourselves in significant ways in either direction, but we get to choose that.
Absolutely. Well, I am off to pay attention to the delicious smelling wings that are about to come out of my oven.
Nice. And your ghrelin will be so low after that meal.
It will.
All right, everybody. Take good care. Have a great week.
Have a great week.